Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. We start today in Scotland, where they confirm that play will be suspended up until June the 10th at least. However, suggestions over the last 24 hours are that they could follow in the footsteps of Belgium, and that would be it. They would take the average points per game for the season, which of course, when you take a look at the table, would mean that Celtic would be champions. Hearts, meanwhile, at the other end, relegated. This won't be confirmed until the 23rd of this month. It would just take 9 of the 12 clubs to agree to this. Craig Burley and Gab Marcotti with us. Craig, I want to start with you. Do you like this idea? Does this make sense?
I don't know if it makes sense, Dan. There's a lot of logistical problems for all the countries at the moment trying to deal with the pandemic, but also figure out what they're going to do with their leagues. Making sense, I'm not sure, but making people very angry, I can guarantee you that's going to happen if it is shuttered now. As you know, Scottish people, we don't need much to make ourselves angry. We get angry pretty easily anyway, but can you imagine on Scotland at the moment, because of the way it is with Rangers and Celtic, Celtic gone for, that would be their 9th title, handed to them on the plate, albeit, they were going to win the league anyway. But Rangers won't see it that way. They've already said, no, if you're going to hand out a title, it has to be handed out over 38 games. And clearly this is not going to be the case if you do it in this manner. You know, Rangers gone for the, Celtic gone for the historic 10 titles, which for those that follow Scottish football will know what that's all about. On the other side of the coin, you know, Anne Budge, who's the owner of Hearts, has said, we'll put up a legal fight if this is the case. 4 points adrift at the bottom, Dan, with 8 games to go. It's not relegation. That's a clear chance to get out of it. However, as you say, there are many logistical problems out there. One of the things I think it's been floated, and it's not just in Scotland but in several countries, is adjusting the league status, adjusting the format of the league, i.e. not relegating teams, bringing teams in, allowing the promoted teams up, increasing the size of the league so everybody kind of gets a piece of the pie, and then figure it out 2 or 3 years down the line how you get it back to normality. That doesn't answer the question about the top of the league, but it certainly would help the some of the scenarios at the bottom of some of the top leagues.
It's very softly at the moment, Gab, because I mentioned they don't want to upset UEFA and have any problems in the future regarding Champions League and Europa League places. So they're looking at maybe April 23rd to make this official.
Yeah, well, first of all, they're not going to upset UEFA. You know, everybody's kind of focused on that thing that about, you know, UEFA talking about finishing the season or it might count against you for next year. UEFA are realistic about the broader situation. And I think one of the important things to bear in mind here is that for some clubs, clubs that are stuck in mid-table, they may well come out and say, well, hang on a minute. If I don't fulfill all my fixtures, yeah, I may have to give some TV money back, but the TV deal in Scotland, you know, is really a pittance relative to other countries. I have to play behind closed doors, so I'm not going to get match day revenues. I have to keep the club going, the training ground, all the people involved in that. I have a bunch of costs involved here to ultimately determine whether I finish 6th or 7th. Why would I want to do that when I've got major cash flow issues? Remember, it's not just about the top flight. It's further down the pyramid. This applies not just in Scotland, but elsewhere. And they may have a strong financial decision not to want to go ahead with this. I think this is stupid. I don't think it has to be either or. You can come up with a playoff system, perhaps, for to settle relegation between Hearts and whoever's coming up from the next tier down. You know, there are ways to do this. Or you can also compensate people financially. You can say, we're in this now, you're going to save yourself some money. So Hearts, if you get relegated, we give you a little more money. There are solutions here. This idea that you absolutely have to finish everything, you know, there are bigger issues out there. One of them is obviously the pandemic and what the pandemic allows you to do. And the other one is that, you know, some clubs might be cutting off their nose to spite their face because they may not be able to afford to continue without fans.
Meanwhile, on the flip side of this, Gab, in Germany, we saw all the teams now back at training. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge coming out and saying, look, we have to get things going once again, certainly to help the economy. It seems like, can they fulfill these plans, these expectations that they have?
I'm neither an epidemiologist nor a virologist, so I can't tell you medically whether this is a wise thing to do, but they do have a plan in place. They're all back in training, although they're training while socially distancing, so it just looks a little bit odd out there, and you wonder what kind of stuff they can do and what kind of stuff they can't do. They're hoping that this can happen behind closed doors. They estimate that it's going to be about 240, 250 people are going to have to be inside the stadium between players, officials, cameramen, support staff, whatever else, to go and pull off these games. They're going to test people before and after. Look, on paper, they're very confident. They say they have plenty of tests. They have plenty of capacity. I think the concern is what happens if somebody tests positive in the middle of this mess. Do you then go and shut everything down again? But equally, you have to, I think, make plans going forward. They're pretty confident. And, you know, just because they say they want to start early May, they want to get everything in place. Should the situation change and that may no longer be possible, I'm sure they'll be sensible and you know, and decide, guys, this isn't going to work. You know, let's push it back a couple of weeks.
Dan, first and foremost, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge is not in a position to be telling people when they need to get on with things. That's for sure. The other side of the coin is, and this is not just Germany, but across the board, for those talking about playing games behind closed doors, potentially. And I was talking to, and I'll credit Derek Ray for this, I was talking to Derek earlier, our colleague, and he, one of the things he was saying, it's been talked about in Germany, and Gab mentioned test kits. If you have, say, the 250 or so people at each ground for these behind-closed-door games, those people don't have to be tested that day. They have to be tested every day leading up to that game and every day after that game until the next game. That's for every club, for every ground. That's thousands upon thousands of tests just to make sure one person doesn't have the coronavirus and these games can go ahead. At a time when a lot of countries don't have enough testing kits for the people on the street. So it's immoral to start talking about getting football games behind closed doors when you're going to have to test hundreds and thousands of people daily just to get these football games on to make sure nobody in the stadium has the virus. That, for me, does not make common sense.
Meanwhile, Gab, big picture looking ahead to Euro 2021, of course, as it is now. Suggestions that some countries already are getting cold feet. Remember, this is going to be a tournament spread over a number of nations within Europe. What's the latest on that?
So there's a report that Spain and Italy in particular are getting cold feet about the matches that, you know, were scheduled, obviously, for this summer have been moved to 2021 in Bilbao and in Rome. My understanding is that this was kind of news to them when I spoke to people at UEFA and also at the Italian FA. They don't view it that way. They just say, like, it's so far into the future, we're not sure. Where you might have a problem is in the other venues who, you know, have already been booked in advance. Obviously, you know, these venues, they have them for concert, they have them for other sporting events. Some venues say, you know what, it might cost us a lot of money to go and make these changes. We're not sure it's worthwhile. I think UEFA's attitude is, we don't need to commit to this right now. Let's have a plan B if we need it. For now, let's go forward and reassess the situation. You know, this tournament is, what, 15 months away? You've got plenty of time to sort things out.
Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. Craig will be with us a little later on. By the way, you can download the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which drops today over on the website. IFAB met today to make changes to the laws of the game for the start of next season. Nothing particularly striking, however, clarification regarding handball into the lead up to the goal. Dale Johnson all over it, by the way, you should follow him. So, goals that will be disallowed. Handball goal, handball pass goal, handball forced a teammate pass goal. Also, as we welcome in Shaka and Ali, the handball rule changes the fact that this is no longer handball. It's down to kind of the bottom of the armpit, Shaq. Are you happy with that?
Listen, I'm happy as long as it's universally understood and universally applied. Maybe the length of a shirt helps in adjudicating those decisions, But as long as all referees are on board and understand the rules and apply it in the same fashion, I have no real issue with the law change.
Mr. Moreno?
Well, the issue is that we're trusting that it is going to be universally applied and, more importantly, universally interpreted. It's still about interpretation. I don't know that this clarification furthers the conversation any further forward, because let me tell you something. What is a pass to a pass to a goal? What is a handball that actually impacts a goal? And how far can you take it? And so while you can say pass to a goal directly for a handball, directly from a pass, from a pass, from a pass to a handball, how about we just say, hey, did the player benefit from utilizing his or her arm and put himself or herself in a position where a teammate can score a goal? Did they score the goal because of the use of the handball somewhere in the sequence of play leading up to the goal? And if that's the case, handball, see you guys later, and there's nothing else to it. I don't know why we have to clarify that, look, if there was a handball in the buildup, it's a handball, we move on with our lives. I don't know that this was absolutely necessary, and I can tell you that it's still going to be up to the interpretation of the referee on the day. That has not been clarified.
Meanwhile, Shaka, the Premier League will have to use monitors now. Any ambiguity in the wording has been taken out. Officials have to go to the monitor. It's a shame, really, it's taken this long for the Premier League to be told what to do.
Yeah, and this is all about the Premier League, as you mentioned, Dan, because everybody else seemed to get that right and been using the monitor as was intended when that law was drafted and technology introduced to the game in that fashion. Why the Premier League went the way that they did continues to bemuse me. We've spoken about it in length during the course of the season while it lasted. And now IFAB is saying to the Premier League, stop doing as you have been. It's confusing everybody and it's not good for the game, and rightly so. This is a slap on the wrist of the Premier League, no more.
Shaka Hislop and Ali Moreno, thank you very much. Goodness me, that took a lot longer to sort out than you're actually on the air, but I appreciate it. Now, over on the website, Mark Ogden was given the task to pick his best ever Premier League 11. Be sure to check that out. Plenty of discussions caused by it. Danny Higginbottom will be with us tomorrow to give us his.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
A number of our writers over on the website recounting the best team they've ever seen. They had to be there. They had to witness it in person. Steve Nicol and Ali Moreno with us to give us their best teams. Steve, you've seen more than most. What was the best?
Thank you, Dan. I would have to say the West Germany team in 1986 that lost in the final, the World Cup, to Argentina, and of course Maradona. I mean, at the time, we played against them with Scotland in one of the group stages, and at the time, you know, you're concentrating on what you've got, and you're not really concentrating on the opposition. But once it's all said and done and over with, if you go through that side, you talk about, I mean, a team with goals, you've got a choice of two out of three of Arlofs, Rudi Völler and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who Rummenigge didn't even start against us. Quality in the middle of the park. Felix Magath, what a left peg. And of course Lothar Matthäus, who could do everything, including getting in the box and scoring goals. And to balance that off, you've got Pierre Littbarski, who was the old man of that side at the time, but been there, seen it, done it. And defensively, I mean, you talk about strength and power and also ability. You know, two centre-backs in Ogentala and Karl-Heinz Foster, who at the time were as good as anybody in the world. Right back, Thomas Berholt, just a lovely football player. In goals, Harold Schumacher, obviously better known for his crazy challenge on Battiston. And to finish off, a guy at left back called Hans-Peter Briegel, who really the Terminator was modelled around. This guy was absolutely huge. I mean, people talk about when you're stripped, you strip bigger. Well, this guy was 6'2", and he looked 6'6". I mean, this team was just incredible. As I said, they got goals, they got ability in the middle of the park. And then defensively, you talk about strength and power. And obviously, they could play as well. So, I mean, what a side. Not a chink in the armour, in my opinion. And we're really unlucky to lose that World Cup final to Argentina.
Meanwhile, Ali, you going earlier or later than 1986?
I am going later than 1986. And... it really, I had my choice of being an spectator and watching France in 1998 and Brazil in 1998, both of whom then met in the final. But it is much more impressive when you actually get to see these teams, not from the stands, but at field level. And I got the opportunity to watch Brazil for a very comfortable seat on the bench with the Venezuelan national team. In the 2005, it was World Cup qualifier for the 2006 World Cup. And it was a powerful realization for the first time in what was, at that point for me, a young and up-and-coming career, when you thought you could play against anybody and you could prepare and you could do your best and you could improve as a player and then you could stare at the eyes of anybody in the world and go against those teams and be successful. This was a powerful realization of saying to yourself, yeah, they're just better than you. They're simply better than you. And no matter what you do, even if you're at your very best, this team could simply destroy us if they wanted to. And so the talent across the field, I had to look it up because I remember watching it. I was right there, but I had to look it up just from confirmation. And it's a who's who of players, historic players for Brazil. It's Cafu down the right-hand side. It's Lucio center back. Then you had Roberto Carlos down the left-hand side in the midfield in an advanced position out of the midfield. It would be Kaká, Ronaldinho, Adriano, Ronaldo. And then coming off the bench was Robinho, who at that time was a real player, not what he became later on in his career. And so it was talent everywhere. And again, a powerless feeling from a player's perspective in understanding that you can do everything that you were asked to do by your manager and in the preparation for the match. I remember a sequence of play where the ball was being played from one side of the back line to the other. We shifted across as a team. We looked good. We were solid. The lines were where they needed to be. And without any sort of space, Roberto Carlos on one step hits a 60-yard ball all across the field over to Cafu, who's tricking down the right-hand side. And you're thinking to yourself, well, hold on a second. We just did everything that we were asked to do. They broke through us, and now we're panicking. Now we're chasing shadows, and it happened time and time again. And oh, by the way, when they got forward, they had the talent that I just mentioned. You just think, you know what? Our best simply cannot compete with this. And that, for a professional player, that's hard to take, but it was easy to understand that they were simply better than what we were.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. By the way, Ali and Stevie back with us on Extra Time answering your questions. You can check that out, as always, on our YouTube channel. Something very unique happened on this day back in 1997. Chelsea against Coventry gave us a situation that I don't think we've ever seen in the Premier League before then, or indeed since. Craig Burley was involved in that game as we welcome him back. Craig, tell us the story.
Yeah, I don't know if it has. I can't remember it happening. Maybe it has. Certainly at lower leagues. I can't remember it in the Premier League. But basically, you know that you had one job. Well, our kit man had one job, and that was for the away game at Highfield Road against Coventry, managed by Gordon Strachan, was to put the away kit in, which he forgot. Now, We didn't know this until we arrived at the ground, and we came in the dressing room. Rud Hillett was the manager, and the kit man was looking the most sheepish I've ever seen him, because he thought he was just about to be sacked on the spot before the game. He said to Rud, I've forgot the kit. And he said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I've got the kit, I've got the home kit, the blue kit, but I forgot the away kit. So Rud, I can tell you, was not particularly pleased. But there's an out here. We'll go and ask Coventry if they'll swap. We'll play in the home kit, the blue kit that we play in at Stamford Bridge, and they'll play in their away kit. Unfortunately, they had a little awkward Scotsman, as I mentioned, as the manager, Gordon Strachan, who said, no, we're not swapping. So he was clearly trying to get in everybody's head. So we ended up, as you saw with the photo, we played with the blue shorts, our traditional blue shorts for the home, and the socks, and Coventry's checkered top. And I can tell you, Hullett was up. He was not, he didn't see the funny side of this. He was not happy at all. And actually, when we were stood in the tunnel about to go out, Gordon Strachan, this is true, he'll probably deny it now, he walked past me and he said, that suits you, that Coventry strip, because he was trying to sign me at the time. And we played horribly. We got beat. I'll blame Frank Leboeuf, because he played in that game as well. And he was just as horrible. And it wasn't a great night, mate, but... yeah, playing in Coventry's kit, and we played like Coventry. We were terrible. Terrible.
1997, Craig. How nuts is that? Craig Burley, thank you very much for taking us through that tale. That brings us to the end of today's show. Just a reminder, we'll be back tomorrow for more. Be sure to join us. Until then, goodbye.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Ali and Stevie alongside me. I'll start with you, Ali, because we know what Stevie's answer will be to this. Best overall player, Steven Gerrard or Andrea Pirlo?
Steven Gerrard. And more variety and more flexibility to his game in terms of what he can give you offensively, more athleticism, also what he can give you defensively. A guy who truly covered box to box and much more of a presence in the attack than Andrea Pirlo was. Andrea Pirlo was an incredible talent with the ball at his feet, but I just have to say there was a point in time in the career of Andrea Pirlo where while he was a great distributor of the ball, he didn't give you much more than that. Magical with his vision, magical with his passing, but not a complete player like Steven Gerrard was.
So pretty much
like Steven Gerrard at LA Galaxy offered very little, Ali.
Well, Andrea Pirlo didn't offer much for NYCFC either.
It's very true.
At least Steven Gerrard ran around a little bit with the LA Galaxy. Pirlo didn't even move.
Ali, don't listen to him. He's just trying to be a wee smarty pants again.
After retirement from the professional game, did you keep playing at all? Sunday league or whatever? Do any pros just completely hang up their boots and never play again? Stevie, you played a little bit, didn't you? You were a goalkeeper for a while.
I did. I played with the over 40s for a period of time. Played outside and inside. But I'd have to say I got fed up with it because... What do you want me to tell you or not?
I got fed up with it. Outside and inside matter?
Because... All right, I'll tell you then. I did, yes.
Well, Ali, what about you? Did you play inside, outside, usual? Upstairs, downstairs?
Look, I want to hear Stevie's story. Go ahead, Stevie. Go ahead, Steve.
You know, it's amazing, Ali. It just shows how stupid he actually is when he thinks it's funny when you say inside and outside. There are two professional leagues that you can play. One is inside and one is outside, Daniel. So I don't know what you're sniggering at. It just shows your ignorance of the professional game.
Get on with the story.
Yeah, I got fed up because, listen, when you're playing with pros, we all understand that there's contact involved. The problem is, when you play with a lot of amateur guys, if there's any contact so whatsoever, all of a sudden it's this big ego thing with, why did you touch me, and all the rest of it, and they all start with the handbags, try to give it the hard man, and the posturing, and all the other nonsense, and then they're complaining. So that's why I stopped playing. I couldn't hack amateurs. They can't take any contact whatsoever. So I had enough of it.
Ali?
Yeah, much like Stevie, I like to go out and play, have a little fun, have a little kick around and what have you, but I could not do it with people that thought they were playing the World Cup final when we were actually just kind of get a sweat on. And then part of what made it most frustrating is that, as Stevie's referring to amateurs, is that they have difficulties completing a five-yard pass, and yet there are a lot of people out there that have those difficulties, and yet they try to do back heels and all sorts of fancy things. And it is so frustrating to think that people believe they're better players because they want to do fancy stuff. And when the truth is, if you cannot do the basic stuff consistently, then why even bother with the back heels? And so, well, that would get me worked up. But what would get me even more worked up is that when you actually go and tell them, hey, look, you don't have to do that. It's like, it's almost as if you're taking the life away from them. It's like, I gotta try things. I gotta do things. I'm like, no, that doesn't make you a better player. And in the end, it's just too much stress, and so I went back to just playing with my kids' team and just training with the U-17s and the U-19s, a little bit perhaps less competitive in terms of you're not playing for something specific, but a little bit more quality, and so that five-yard passes are completed with more consistency, and I don't go crazy, and I don't have people trying to win the World Cup in a Thursday night over 40 league.
Hey Dan, you know the other thing as well with a lot of amateurs, they can't control their body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as professionals,
right?
You know, we would do doggy runs, which means that you sprint to a point, then you stop quickly, you go back another way, and then your movement, and you're in full control of what you can do. I played in goals for my daughter's co-ed team once. She asked me to come and play, and it would be good for us to play together, and then we could have a drink afterwards. I thought, that's a great idea. So I went in goals. About 20 minutes after we started, a ball was rolling to me. I went down on my knee to pick it up, and some idiot comes steaming right into me, hit me right in the ribs with her knee, and I had to go to the hospital. I had to leave my car. I got taken to the hospital. I couldn't breathe. I got carried off the field. Honest to goodness, that was it. That was the last.
You know the car dealership blow up dolls, Dan? You know the ones that just kind of blow up in the wind, kind of like that?
Yes.
Kind of crazy. That's what a lot of players that play in this sort of over 40 leagues are like. They're just completely out of control when they're running, and they don't quite know when to stop, and when a tackle is a tackle, and when it's just time to pull up. They just kind of keep going until they hit a wall, and that's about it.
Well, until it hit me, right in the ribs.
Yeah, well, that's a wall right there. It's a soft wall, but it's a wall, nonetheless.
That's a proper wall.
Stevie, is Sadio Mane better than John Barnes was?
Wow. I'd have to say no. You know, I think Sadio Mane's lucky the way Liverpool play, that you know, his job is to pretty much stay on one half of the field, generally. Yes, he does come back now and again and help out, but generally he's told to stay in the attacking half of the field and go at defenders. Now, Banzi, with the ball at his feet, dribbling at his best, was better than Mane. Unfortunately for Banzi, he had to do a lot more work in the game because one of his responsibilities was to defend, get back behind the ball, and be in a defensive posture. So, listen, as great as Sadio Mane is, John Barnes is one of the best players I've ever played with. And I've played with a lot of good players at Liverpool, obviously. But Barnes was absolutely fantastic. Unplayable sometimes. In fact, most of the time, unplayable. Until, unfortunately, he tore his Achilles and that curtailed him a little. But before that, absolute lights out, as Mariner would say.
He was my favourite player growing up, Stevie. Interesting fact for you.
Oh, well, thank you, Dan.
Right. That's all right, no problem. Who had more success in MLS? Get ready for this one. It's for you, Stevie. Get prepared. Alejandro Moreno or Stephen Nicol?
Ooh.
Did you send that one?
No, I didn't send it in. It's not me.
Yeah, right. Well, you did it the other day. We were talking about MLS.
They haven't said if it's indoor clever. Or outdoor.
Did you win the final? Did you win the final? Ali, how many times did you win MLS Cup?
Over that.
Twice?
Three times, dude.
Well, there you go.
So, Ali more successful than you?
I think it's very unprofessional that people working on the show should be able to put questions in to try and mock one of the fellow professionals. Completely unprofessional. But in your case, Thomas, not surprised. You've done more sniggering today than you've done in the last 5 years. And you're lucky. You're lucky I'm sat
me,
in here. It's no use.
This is a good thing.
I wouldn't punch you.
Oh, man. I like this question. Right.
15 mile an hour wind would blow you done.
Who was more successful, Moreno or Nicol?
I was. Stevie was great, but I was more successful. What can I tell you? I wish I could say something different, Stevie, but...
Little pat on the head there, Stevie. Little pat on the head.
I can't lie, Stevie. Can't lie. I like this question.
Who is better?
This question's coming.
Who is better, James Rodriguez or Philip Coutinho? Stephen.
Ooh. Do you know what? That's a tester. Because, no question, both have got fantastic ability and at times produce something from nothing. But both kind of fall into the category of lacking consistency. I find it very difficult to separate them. They've both done fantastic things, but both in some ways have disappointed. I'm finding it difficult to separate them. No question, both have got incredible ability, but unfortunately neither of the two of them can seemingly put it together consistently.
I'll separate them, Dan. I'm going to say James Rodriguez is better simply because of what we have seen with him and Colombia. The club performance hasn't been all that impressive lately, neither has Coutinho's, but with Colombia, James Rodriguez continues to play at a very high level.
Oh, an England question for you now, Stevie. You love an England question. Considering the strength and depth England have up front, what would your front three be?
Oof. Well, we have to play your pal Kane. Did ever tell me, Ali, that Dan thought that Harry Kane was a one-season wonder a few years ago. Anyway, I'm not sure whether I told you, but anyway. Harry Kane would have to start.
Ali, did you ever hear the time that Stevie didn't think Salah would make it into the starting 11 of Liverpool?
Oh, yeah, I heard that one. Yeah, I did. Now, what about the one about Daniel Sturridge?
So Kane in the middle.
Daniel Sturridge was a good one, too.
I've lost connection here. Yeah, right.
Well, I think the
difference between the two statements... Oh, never mind. The difference between the two statements is pretty clear. Salah hadn't even played a game yet. Salah had just signed. So Smarty Pants Thomas again. We had Coutinho, Mane, and Bobby Firmino. And so...
Yeah,
a ball hadn't even been kicked, and I did say that, you know what, it's not 100% that Salah is going to start. So, not a ball had been kicked. Harry Kane, on the other hand, has scored 1,000 goals, had started the season again playing well, and Mr. Dan Thomas went, I think he's a one-season wonder. So there's quite a bit of difference between the two statements.
I admit it, Stevie, I own
Smarty
it.
Smarty Pants.
I own it.
Good.
So who's the front so three? Harry Kane,
Raheem Sterling, Jadon Sancho.
Yeah, you've said that. Pretty decent. Last question, Ali.
And that's:
is Craig as loud and as and annoying on the golf course as he is on ESPN?
No, no. Craig is a wonderful young man when he's out there on the golf course enjoying himself, talking to everybody, the center of attention. He talks to other people playing in the other holes. He brings people in to play into our group. I mean, he is gregarious. It is fantastic to have around. Plus, he gives you a tip every once in a while. Hey, you might want to try to do this. Open up your body like that. Open up the club face. Set yourself up like this. He loves giving advice. The man in the golf course is nowhere near what he is on the show, and certainly what he is in the studio. And the golf course, Craig, is fun to be around. The other Craig, not so much.
He does. He pulls the mask off. As soon as he drives into the car park and gets out of the car, he does that. Tears that mask off, and there's this other guy there.
A happy guy.
Or maybe it's you. Do you know what? Maybe it's you. Maybe it's you, Thomas. Maybe it's you that irritates him. That could be the problem.
Well,
because you're an irritant.
That is it then. Stevie, I know you've got...
You're like, what are these scratchy
jobs to be doing around the house? So make sure I'll speak. It's like your leg.
Scratching
your leg you had for ages.
Dan, remember
that. Eleanor's got a lot of jobs for you to do.
Remember what I said to you earlier. It's amazing how the less you do, the less you want to do. Don't forget that. That'll take you through your day.
Thank you very much, David. That's much appreciated. Cheers, Ali. ESPN FC will be back on your screens tomorrow.
David?
I believe Danny Higginbottom will be with us. David Brent.